Before I start the show, I want to thank Baldy Mountain Resort, specifically Brandon and Quinn, who run operations and marketing. Baldy's a destination everyone who listens to Effin' Rad should add to their bucket list. Maybe try and hit a Big Powder Thursday. And if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, there's a gear swap at What Lab at 1814 Pandora Street in Vancouver tonight, January 31st from 7 to 9. Hosted by All Access Adventures. Go check it out. Also, shout out to all our Patreon supporters. If you want to join the Effin' Rad community, check out the link in our Instagram bio. The Effin' Rad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Skyview Campers, Never Summer's innovative take on the tiny home. Designed and built in beautiful Colorado, check out skyviewcampers.com. Wired Snowboards builds quality snowboards by hand 10 minutes away from my house. Visit wiredsnowboards.com and order one today. Fixed bindings are easy to adjust, long-lasting, high-performance bindings built to have less impact on the environment. Check out fixedbindingco.com. Rip Curl Outerwear, strength, durability, and performance. Designed to search further in the snow, head to ripcurl.com and check out the Anti-Series jacket. I can't wait to rock this thing. New Greens, 100% organic, vibrant green juice. Buy yourself some at newgreens.com and use code EFFINRAD at checkout for 20% off. And for a chance to try New Greens for free, listen to the end of the show. The Boardroom Snowboard Shop. Best selection, best prices, Vancouver's premier snowboard shop. Go to boardroomshop.com and use code EFFINRAD10 to save 10% off your next purchase. Support also comes from Mount Seymour, Grouse Mountain, Cypress Mountain, the Pro Standard GoPro accessories, and our friends at 1910. You can use code EFFINRAD at checkout for 20% off at 1910.com. The Haven's a center for transformational learning located on beautiful Gabriola Island. Plan a visit at haven.ca and use code EFFINRAD at checkout to save 10% off their Come Alive program. Tyler Nickel is a CAT operator whose unique outlook on the community is both refreshing and inspiring. I drove the 5 hours to Osoyoos to ride with Tyler at Baldy Mountain Resort, a community of passionate snow enthusiasts who regularly get to shred pow with no lineups. Tyler's history includes some straight-up wisdom about how communities thrive and how to actually get things done. I first heard about Tyler from my friend Matt Goddard, who's a huge fan of Tyler's Mount Seymour Park builds. I basically knew that Tyler built the 2010 Olympic halfpipe at Cypress, but not much else. Turns out Tyler's philosophy on accessible snowboarding might actually be the antidote to the snowboard industry's trend towards conglomerate mega corporations and $300 a day lift tickets. Strap in, this one's fun. We start by talking about Tyler's legendary dad.
Oh, dad was gnarly.
Yeah.
Yeah, dad was, yeah, like he was so strong. Like, I remember one time we were mountain biking, we were staying at his place, I had some friends over. And at the end of the day, Graydon and a couple of the girls, they were like stretching, and dad comes in, kokanee in hand. He's like, "What are you guys doing? Stretching there, young bucks." And he's like, "Stretch. You don't need to stretch." He's like, drops down, does 20 push-ups, and then does 10 on each arm one-handed, and then like jumps up and grabs his beer and continues on his way. And he's like, "Hi, you guys." And he just like went off. We're like, "Oh."
Is that, I mean, he's not just from the Yukon though, right? Like he's a Ontario guy.
He's like an old farm boy from Ontario. Okay. Like
yeah.
He grew up
farm sensibility.
Blenheim, Ontario. It's like an agricultural area, and there's like lots of tobacco and wheat and corn and livestock. And so he grew up, you know, riding horses with my mom and working on the fields and then driving trucks and heavy equipment and just got at it, you know.
Yeah.
Had four boys and yeah.
So there's four of you guys.
There was three now. My oldest younger brother passed away like 4 years ago.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's heavy.
Yeah, so it's pretty weird. Like in the last 4 to 5 years, I lost my brother. Kind of four of the most influential people in my life. Like my dad, my brother, my grandpa, and my former employer of like 10 years, who I worked for in the summers running equipment. And like he taught me so much stuff. And like, he was my boss, but like, he was like my best friend. Like, we, so like, lost him too. He died at like 52.
Oh, that's so young.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, huge influence. Like, and he was one of the guys that encouraged me to go off on my own and start my own business.
What was his name?
Dale Harder. Yeah. Really just hardworking, self-made.
It's a badass name for a hardworking
general
dude.
Contractor. Yeah. Like, we did everything, you know, like, he had excavators, bobcats, dump trucks, welders. Like, we just like, you name it, we did it, you know, like, yeah.
And that was up in Whitehorse?
That was in Whitehorse, yeah. I worked for him for 10 years on and off, like, about 5 years before I moved to Vancouver to pursue park stuff down there, and then I moved home. So before I left, I worked for Mount Sema, and I worked for Dale for about 5 years, and then this opportunity in Vancouver came up, so I moved away, and then 7 years later, I moved back, and I got my job back with Dale, and then I went back to work at Sema.
That was sick.
And so it was like I went back into the same two jobs that I left, and they were just there kind of waiting for me.
So like, just for the listeners, it's going to get difficult to follow. There's Mount Seymour and Mount Sema.
Yeah.
Are big part of your story.
Yeah, for sure.
Sema is a local, where is that, Dawson?
Or it's in Whitehorse.
It is in Whitehorse.
Yeah. So yeah. Mount Sema is the local hill in Whitehorse. It's about 15 minutes out of town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice little hill.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds really rad.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, now we're here at Mount Baldy, where you've been the, like, basically the main grooming mm-hmm. supervisor for a full season. You're going into season two.
Yeah.
But your background is, I mean, was your first major thing the Olympics, or you'd done a bunch of like big builds for other stuff before that, right?
Well, I started out at Mount Sema actually. Like, so I grew up gold mining, you know, I had a son at a young age, and dad was like, I got you an interview at the gold mine, don't fuck it up. And so went and did this interview, and then that turned into kind of a career in the mining industry. And I worked there for 6 years year round.
What did you do?
I was working in the process plant. So we were like in a gold processing plant, cyanide solution, like kind of a heap leach industrial style gold mining environment, like a, you know, 120 person camp, just like an hour outside of Dawson City. So I kind of like learned a lot there, you know, like the skills I, you know, got later that I needed for later in life. Like I got all that from the gold mine. Like, you know, I learned how to run equipment. I learned how to manage people. I learned how to weld. I learned how to work on pumps and just so many different things. Like, yeah. And so many like older experienced guys that were willing to share knowledge with me. Cause I was just a kid, you know, like I started there when I was 18 and everybody else was like in their 30s, 40s, 50s.
You had a 60s. Kid when you were 18.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Yeah. That's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. 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 I guess, you know, long winters in Dawson City and you know, it happens.
Yeah.
But we just, me and his mom were in love. We were young and we were just like, yeah, we'll do it, you know? And
like, it was planned.
It wasn't planned.
Oh, but at that time you're like, okay, we're making this decision. We're like, okay, we're keeping the baby.
Like we were into it and our parents supported us and it turned out good, you know, like, I got to work right away and he's got a good mom and, you know, it just all worked. Like it wasn't that hard. And like, I raised him in through the snowboard industry. Like he traveled around with me to all the hills and like,
yeah.
It's been pretty cool. Like,
yeah. When you were 18 and you find out you're going to have a kid, how far along in snowboarding are you? Had you already, like, did you ever do like a sponsored year? It sounds like you made movies and stuff too with your buddies.
Was yeah. We always were kind of inspired by snowboard movies. You know, I was never really drawn to like contests or like competitive riding. I always kind of like the lifestyle videos, magazine content, like, and living in Dawson, like I started snowboarding there when I was maybe 13, I guess I started, was when I first snowboarded.
Right.
When we moved out to Dawson from Blenheim, like I was like a skateboard kid.
Yep.
And then like dad uproots us from Blenheim and moves us to Dawson City, Yukon. And it's a lot of winter and there's mountains and like, we were kind of flatlanders, you know?
Were you living out of a school bus at that time or did you drive the school bus up and then have the housing?
So when dad made the decision to move us to Dawson City, because he wanted to pursue gold mining. He bought a school bus and converted it into a motor home and a nice livable quarters for the family. He spent the whole winter building that at my grandpa's truck shop. And then in the spring, he pulled us out of school and I think it was like April. Then we headed north because the mining season starts kind of like late May. So
yeah.
So we did the big trip up and the big convoy, you know, dad was driving the bus, mom was driving the van. the van was towing a trailer, the bus was towing a pickup truck. They were both full of stuff. You know, there's four boys, you know, there's a cat, there's a bird.
Wow.
But he had it rigged up good. Like there was a generator on the roof and like we had electricity. Like we were playing Nintendo, driving a bus across the country, you know, and
sick.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah. That's actually a really cool adventure for
kids. And we took it slow. Like they wanted to make a big family trip out of it. So we took a couple of weeks and we stopped at all the cool things to see. And, you know, we went to West Edmonton Mall and did the water slides and we went to all the little historic sites and
rad,
you know, like, but on the way there, Steamboat Mountain through like Muncho Lake area, the bus started struggling in the mountains as we went north and started overheating. So dad had to abandon the pickup and leave it behind. And he's like, made a deal with somebody like, hey, can I store this here? I'll come back for it later. I just got to get the family up north. So we kept going. And then when we got to Dawson and got settled in, dad hitchhiked back down to Muncho Lake and went and got the truck and then drove it back up north.
What a beast.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So you're a skateboarder and you find yourself in Dawson. Like, are there paved roads? There's not.
No. So we end up in Dawson and it's boardwalks and dirt streets.
Right.
And you know, like I'm this skateboard kid from Blenheim, Ontario. And I'm like, we're kind of like, what are we going to do? You know? And we skateboarded on the boardwalks and it, you know, it just made the worst noise. It was terrible. The wheels were always hooking up on stuff, but there was like a local gas station that had a little concrete pad. And then a friend of ours, his dad was a helicopter pilot and there was a pad outside the helicopter hangar.
Wow.
So we were allowed to skateboard there after hours.
Fuck yeah.
So we had a couple spots. It wasn't like totally obsolete, but like,
yeah.
And then winter came around and I actually skied my first season when I got there.
Yeah.
Everybody was skiing. Like snowboards weren't really around in Dawson in the early 90s. Like this is probably 92, 93, something like that.
Yeah.
Like everybody's on skis. And there was maybe like three people that had snowboards, you know, and they're riding like old Kempers, you know, like old Sims boards. And then I seen this kid, he was a really talented skier and he has a snowboard. He doesn't use it. And I was like, hey, can I try out your snowboard? Like, looks like a skateboard to me, you know?
Totally.
So he let me try it. And I was hooked. So I was like, Sean is like, you got to sell me this board. He's like, well, okay, I'll ask my mom. Like we were at that age where like you had to ask your mom. And I was like, okay, I'll ask my mom if she'll buy it. And you know, so he called me and he's like, my mom said I can sell it. And I was like, mom, I can't remember how much it was, maybe like $80 or something. And
sure.
So I got this board off him and it was a Legend SE 135. Yeah. 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 Like
when you're mentioning the Kemper, I'm like, oh, maybe you got a Kemper.
No, Legend SE 135.
Wow. So the SE just had the edges.
Steel edges. Yeah.
Steel edges. That's what it stood for,
this
right?
This wasn't a Mogul
Monster. It probably
monster.
Said on there, right?
Yeah.
Well, there was Legends with no edges as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Legend SE was like kind of a halfway between the Legend, the Edge, and then there was the SE. Yeah.
And like, I rode that thing everywhere, man. Like the mountain right behind Dawson.
You can make that work? Like, were you able to make that thing turn?
I was free riding it on. So there's a mountain behind Dawson called the Midnight Sun Dome. And it's like a 1700 vertical foot mountain with a paved shuttle road to the top.
Unreal.
And the road was unmaintained at about the midway point. So when I was a kid, you could only drive about halfway up and then you had to snowmobile or hike to the top. But lower mountain was still good. And so we were hiking and free riding and riding POW. And at Moose Mountain, there's a local hill in Dawson City, a little volunteer run, T-bar hill with three runs. And we'd go there every weekend. And one of my best friends, Kevin McCauley, he lived up on the dome in a subdivision. And so I'd bring my snowboard to school and I'd catch the school bus home with him to go to his place. And then we'd go to his place, eat some nachos, you know, fuel up. And then we'd go down to the ski hill.
Rad.
You know, and it'd be cold, like it's 20, 30 below all the time there. But we'd go shovel and build jumps. And the ski hill thought we were kind of like, it was when snowboarders were like, oh, you crazy snowboarders, you want to build these jumps. And so they kind of gave us the middle run. It had the most kind of like broken terrain where there was transition. And they're like, just do that stuff here. Don't do it anywhere else. But you can have this run and just do what you want to do. And so we'd go out there to school all the time after school. And
just as school kids.
Just school kids.
They're like, yeah, do it here.
We had shovels stashed up there and we would just, the Yukon snow up in Dawson is so dry. It's just faceted, dry dust, you know? And so like you shovel it and you pack it and you pack it and you pack it and it takes forever to set up and you got to work on it every day. And,
like, yeah.
And you hit it and you still trench into it. And you know, so like, it was a bit of a process.
I like this.
Yeah.
This makes a lot of sense with like, I see your brain working now snow farming. Like you,
yeah,
you have this calculation when you're talking about the job you're doing now, which is grooming,
yeah,
about snow farming, cutting in roads. Like you're obviously doing something that you're supposed to be doing. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we talked about it on the chairlift. Like, hey, if you're doing something and it's a slog, and you hate it, mm-hmm, like you should probably quit.
Yeah,
for sure. Quit and do some other thing, yeah, right?
No, we loved it.
Like, yeah, and so this is where it comes from. You're a mm-hmm kid in the snow, mm-hmm, legend SC, yeah, riding a T-bar for Christ's sakes. Those are harder than riding a chairlift.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's a real difficult thing to do, to ride a T-bar. But then once you've got it, now you're skilled.
And you get strong. You're standing on the board the whole time. You're totally never sitting, you know? Like it's,
yeah, one, it's yeah, one, cool, one footing up a fucking T-bar.
And that T-bar at Moose Mountain, it's an old, like, homemade T-bar. I think it came from Manitoba. Some old farmers built it.
Wow.
You know, so it's just this old, it was built in the 80s. You know, it replaced a rope tow that was previously there. So that hill's got some history. It's kind of neat. Yeah. It's 100% volunteer run because we're a territory. We're lucky. There's a lot of like territorial funding for recreation and that kind of thing. So it's a government funded volunteer run hill. And it's $10 day passes.
Wow.
$7 rentals. It's amazing.
That's pretty dope.
It's amazing. And I had the opportunity a few years ago, they got some funding to pursue some earthwork for a terrain park and weld some features up. And so I went in there with an excavator and a bulldozer and create that middle run that we used to go in and shovel. I was able to go in with a D7 in a big 30 ton excavator and sculpt the whole place and,
wow,
and just turn it into this awesome thing.
What a full circle, yeah, story. That's beautiful.
So now it just snows on it. The features are pre-shaped. You got to push the jumps in, but like the tables, sure, are built, the decks for the rails are built. I fabbed them up, rails and boxes. And so it's just, they just have like this resort quality park at this tiny little northern, it's Canada's furthest, most northern terrain park.
I have to visit it now.
Since that dirt work, I've sponsored like an annual spring event there, and I go and for free build up this park and host this event and reach out to sponsors and, you know, and give prizes away. And
that's so rad.
Super cool. Yeah.
That's super fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So what comes next after the SE?
After the SE, the next board was a Mistral.
Nice.
With black bindings, like BLAX.
I remember them. Yeah. I do. Direct mounted to the board, or did it have inserts?
It had inserts.
So was it yellow and black stripey, or was it?
It was a totally blacked out board. It was
all
completely black.
Yeah.
Like directional, yeah, free ride kind of board.
Yeah.
And I was jealous. My buddy at the time, he got the original Sin with the big shovel tips, the twin tip.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I always wanted like the Division 23 Peter line with the rainbow, or like the Avalanche Road Trip. I always wanted that board.
The little lunch tray was, yeah, the road trip. The
I never got them. I rode the, yeah, Mistral for quite a while. And yeah, then the next one was a Liquid 150 with Preston baseless bindings.
Killer.
Yeah. So that was my first true twin tip board.
Yeah.
And then, kind of got into boarding at that point as far as like spinning and, you know, doing tricks and like, yeah, kind of went like up from there.
How
like,
far did you take your snowboarding career? Like, were you trying to get sponsored and that kind of thing?
No, that wasn't even really on the radar. Like, you know, growing up in Dawson, it's just a small northern mining kind of touristy town.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 1,200-1,500 residents. Like, we were just bored and bored.
Yeah.
You know, and we were just feeding off each other, riding. Yeah, so we were just riding for fun, pushing each other. And, like, you know, we were watching, like, the Whiskey movie. You know, like, there was a lot of inspiration. Like, you know, and as I got older, like, you know, we started watching, you know, like Stomping Grounds was a big one for me.
That's a great one.
True Life, obviously, like, we would religiously watch True Life and then, you know, go to the, like, once I was like kind of like 19, 20, like True Life came out and we were always watching that. And great movie. Just so many, there's so many, but like, those were kind of standout ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So when do you get your first job actually grooming?
So first job SEMA? Grooming, that was at Mount SEMA. So I was working at the gold mine. I finished kind of my stint at the gold mine, 6 years there. And then I started working summers at an emerald mine in the Southeast Yukon, kind of a cool opportunity there. But then I had winters off. So I started actually volunteer coaching first at the local snowboard club.
Yeah.
Just something to do, meet some people, coach some kids. So we'd dry land train in the gymnastics gym once a week. And then we'd be on snow once a week. And then the hill just wasn't very good. Like, there was a chairlift and there was runs, but there was no park. Like the park we were hand building in Dawson was superior to this ski hill that had a chairlift, you know? And
yeah.
So it kind of led to me kind of pursuing, you know, talking to the board at the hill and pursuing like, hey, can we build a park? Like, can we do this? And that led to drawing diagrams and making plans.
And wow.
And it went as far as like, I got 1,000 signatures on paper to support it. It wasn't like a protest. It was like a support letter. So
that's so rad.
So I got all these forms made and I'm getting people to sign them. I'm giving the kids to take to high school and getting their friends to sign them. Teachers are grabbing them and signing them. And so I remember going to this board meeting and I'm trying to pursue this terrain park and I've got these older board members and they don't know what a park is. Like they're all skiers and it's kind of new to them. Cause this would have been probably 2002 or three.
Yeah.
I moved to Whitehorse in 2001. And they're like, well, why should we do this? Like, why do you think this is a good idea? And I was like, well, I have 1,000 names on paper to support this. And that's like 3 times more season passes than you sell. So if you do the math, does that mean you'll sell, you know, triple the amount of season passes? I don't know, but maybe it's worth trying to do it. And so then we moved forward and they let me do it.
I fucking love this.
Dude. Yeah. It was really cool.
You've always been that guy.
Yeah. 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 And so I got lucky. I started grooming there and started doing some park stuff and it was all natural snow, super dry, old Snowcat, like an old Printoth T4. It had a chain flail tiller. Like it was awful. Like it wasn't it's not like the cats now. Like it, sure. You know, it took quite a bit more effort to get a good product. And then, I got lucky. Mount Sema and Whitehorse won the Canada Games bid. So then we got a bunch of federal money for infrastructure. So we got snowmaking and we got 2 new Snowcats.
Rad.
You know? And then I was just in the position already. And so then that led to like learning how to build a half pipe and building like the moguls and the aerials for the games. And
holy
so I got
shit.
Kind of thrown right into it. Like, yeah.
So did they hire a builder and then that builder had you as a secondary
backup guy? So I was building a pretty successful park and we were having a lot of fun with that, but I didn't know anything about building a half pipe. Like, you know, and that's not something you just mess around with. Like
no.
They're perfect.
By that time.
Yeah. An 18-foot half pipe has to be perfect.
Absolutely.
Especially for like a Canada Games. So,
yeah.
So they hired a builder and they had Steve Petrie from Arena Snowparks fly up and, I got to work with him. He's a legend. Like he's like super good guy. And, so I got to learn how to build pipes from him and yeah, it was really cool. It just kind of blew my mind. Like just the volume of snow we had to stack on the walls and then gut the pipe and shape the walls and then, you know, grind it out with the pipe cutter and like quite a process. Like
who came out for the Canada Games? Do you remember watching them and being like stoked on the caliber of riding?
Yeah. Like the McMorris brothers were there for it. And I didn't know who they were at the time. Cause they were just young bucks, you know, but like,
yeah,
but they were there. Like that was, they were at Canada Games and Whitehorse, you know,
incredible.
I got to cut the pipe that they rode. Like, yeah, kind of cool. Like it's looking back cool. at it, not yeah. knowing who they were, what they'd become. And now look, you know, look who they are. Like pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you moved down to Vancouver for the Olympic bid, so you're at Mount Sema for 8 years or something.
So probably. I was at Mount Sema for, at that time, yeah, I was there for 5 years.
Five years.
I did 3 years and then we got the Canada Games bid. So then we did a test event year and then the games.
Rad.
And then I got to work with Steve and then he said, hey, you're pretty good at this and I like your work. How would you like to come to Vancouver? We need an in-house guy at Cypress to cut the pipe for the season. So I was like, well, yeah, I'd never even really been to Vancouver before other than just kind of flying through. I didn't know the city at all. It wasn't a place I really visited. And so I went down for just a quick meet and greet with the manager at the Hill and did kind of the handshake and then I moved to Vancouver.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah. So it was just a few months decision to just, you know, uproot and go. But at the time, my son's mom and me had split at that point. Just different interests. We kind of grew apart a little bit, nothing crazy or anything. But I had to leave my son behind, which was the hardest kind of decision. And so I kind of put it on him. I was like, hey, Brett, like I've got this opportunity. If you don't want me to go, I'll stay here. Like I don't need to go. Like I'm happy here. But there's this cool thing and I'll fly you down every holiday, every, you know, we'll just fly down as much as we can. You'll come, you know, live with me all summer, you know, but you'll continue in your school in Whitehorse here so that he was stable and things kind of stayed normal for him. And, at that point he was, what was he in? Grade five. And he'd been snowboarding since he was three, skateboarding since he was four. And he understood the importance of it. So he's like, no, dad. He's like, you can go. You should go. And so like, I got his blessing to go. Wow. And then I was like, okay, we're going, you know? And like, we made plans and we moved to Vancouver. Yeah. Yeah. Moved to the big city. Like,
where did you move?
We moved to North Van. At first we stayed in Kitsilano. We found a cool place to stay down by the beach and then just like kind of looked for a house.
Yeah.
So then we found a nice place. We lived up in Lynn Valley.
Sick.
Near Kirkstone Skate Park there on Mountain Highway.
Yeah, that's dope.
It is fairly close to Cypress. The commute was easy. Like, I was kind of a small town guy and I was kind of overwhelmed by the city. And
yeah,
we didn't have smartphones then really. Like, you know, so you couldn't just Google Maps off. I remember like looking on the computer and like printing maps off to figure out where I was going. Like, you had to make plans, you know, or you had to have a roadmap.
That's amazing.
You know, and like now you just punch in your phone and the phone talks to you and tells you where to turn and, you know, and so I moved to Cypress and, you know, so I went from Dawson to Whitehorse and then boom, Vancouver. And
wow.
And then, you know, I went down there thinking I was pretty cool. You know, I'd spent some time in a cat. I built a few parks, like, you know, and I'm like an average rider, like I can ride okay. And, I had no idea what I was getting into as far as like the West Coast snow and how much of it comes down and just like what that's all about, you know, like, yeah, that was really big learning curve. Like, you know, I adjusted quickly and like figured it out, but it was a lot of snow that year. Like, I think that year all three mountains got together early February and had a 500 centimeter party at the Linwood. Remember Linwood at the bottom of Mountain Highway?
I do.
So
yeah,
it was a big snow year. Like, and that was my first year down there. That would have been 2008.
Right. So yeah. you guys built the pipe for 2 years. Is that right? 2008, 2009. And then
2 years of test events. So for like an Olympics, you do like a national event, then you do a World Cup and then you do Olympics. So by the time you get to the Olympics, everybody's gone through the motions, the contractors, the volunteers. And so then it's supposed to just tick along real nice.
Nice.
The funny thing was though, the first two times we built it, it was huge snow years. We built the pipe almost out of all natural snow.
Of course.
And then the Olympic year came around and there's no snow.
It was just that one little strip. Didn't you guys have to bring in snow from truckloads of snow from Seymour? They brought natural snow over to.
So we kind of got lucky. The snow they made for the pipe was actually kind of adequate for what we needed. They were trucking in snow from Manning Park.
Wow.
For the Aerials and Moguls.
Okay.
And that's because the Aerials and Moguls venues finished in the parking lot. So the dump trucks could just come in.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Winch Cats could just doze it up the hill.
Yeah. That was all new. All those runs were brand new cut and everything. What a weird.
Yeah.
It was like such a bummer snow year.
Oh, yeah. And then the Border Cross, which was right beside us.
Yes.
The big finish ramp was right beside the half pipe. And that's where the helicopter was flying snow in from the top of SkyChair. So they had an excavator up there. They had this giant helicopter because SkyChair had snow. Like, there was snow at high elevation.
Yeah.
So this helicopter, we're working on the pipe and we're watching this chopper fly back and forth all day, dropping snow on the course.
What an insane expense.
Yeah. And then the pipe, like the pipe construction, like normally you push your decks out, you can let the snow slough, you know, do what it's going to do. You get on the decks with the cat. Well, we had to conserve every little drop of snow. And so I don't know whose plan it was. It was Steve's kind of the mastermind. It was his contract. And so we had to get orchard posts and plywood and form board the whole outside of the walls of the pipe. And then he would go in with the cat and push the snow and the form boards would catch it so it wouldn't run. And we would let it all set up. And then the next day we would deconstruct all that and move it up. And then he would push it again. And so we we couldn't afford to lose any snow.
What a crazy amount of work.
In the half pipe, the decks were so small at the end. They were only a cat width. They were supposed to be huge. Like, there was supposed to be room for spectators,
yeah,
the stadium lights.
Yeah.
And the decks were so narrow. There was only room for the lighting. No spectators were allowed. Like, it was pretty tight.
Yeah.
And then it was so rainy and soggy. Like, once we got like a basic shape on the pipe, there was like no more snow cat allowed. It was just too soupy. Like, they got the cut in and then it was just hand buffed after that.
Wow.
And like, I remember the pipe was in pretty good shape and we all went home. We came home the next day. It rained that night and the pipe looked like Swiss cheese when we came back. Like, there was holes the size of softballs all through the walls. Like, all the little air pockets that were, you know, when it got pushed.
Yep.
Those all just melted out and there was just giant cavities everywhere. And so then it was up to us to like hand patch these. So some of us were in crampons. Some of us were on the walls and spent like a couple of days standing in crampons on the wall, receiving snowballs from the people above, and then filling the holes with them and like troweling them out basically.
By hand.
And some of the holes you could put your arm in up to your shoulder just about. So we're like stuffing snow in, smoothing it with your hand, and you're standing on crampons, so your calves are killing you. Like, it was like there was a lot of labor going on there, and vert shovel cutting the whole coping edge, like trying to get that perfect. And
yeah. How did the competitors rate that pipe? Like, what was the feedback from the people that rode it?
I think the pipe rode pretty good. Like,
yeah.
Like, Sean won, which was, you know, like...
Yeah, he wasn't fighting the pipe.
He was boosting. Like, the first night of training, he was flying. Like,
flying.
I think the pipe was well-received, you know? Like, yeah.
Did you get to watch him ride, like, in practice and stuff?
Yeah, we watched the practice. Like, I was standing on the rider's left wall in his first backside air, and we were just watching him like two stories over our heads.
Just
like,
another level.
It's one thing to see it on TV, but
right,
it's another thing to be standing on the wall and having, you know, have all the riders jumping over your heads.
Yeah.
Really cool.
The people that were there watching in person, it was a very exclusive event. It was very expensive to be there.
Yeah.
It was insane. But all of a sudden there was a bit of magic. Like, I'm not an Olympics fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not even a competitive snowboarding fan.
Yeah.
But when the half pipe finals went on, we were all at DC watching it on the TV live.
Yeah.
And like, there was a feeling of kind of pride about like, this is going down at fucking Cyprus right now.
That was a special night. Like,
yeah.
And the halftime show was really good. Like, the DJ that played like was blowing people's minds. Like, it was kind of a party vibe. And like, night events are cool. Like, men's night half pipe is. Yeah, it was really cool.
Were there any times while you were setting it up that you're like, you know, you've got those arm deep holes where you were like, this isn't going to work?
We were getting soaked. Like, we'd be working on the pipe. It's raining on us. Like, you go down to the lodge for lunch and there would be a lineup of people in the bathroom, you know, at the push button hand dryers.
Yeah.
There'd be a lineup of people there with their boot liners on their lunch break, struggling to just dry their boots. Like, people were just soaked. Like, it was bad. Like, it was not a good work environment. And like, everybody that worked on all those venues and did all that stuff, like, everybody pulled it off. Like, it was pretty incredible. Like,
you have any Canadian standouts that you saw ride that Olympic pipe?
Yeah. Justin Lamoureux. Like, he had a night. Like, holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he made finals.
Wow.
You know, and like, he didn't have the big caliber tricks like Lago or Scotty had.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, Lago or Sean White had.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's not Kazu, but like, but he made it to finals. Like, he had a huge personal best. Like, he was boosting. Like, it was amazing. Like, and we were like going for, like, we were cheering for him. We're like, oh man.
Hell yeah.
And every time he dropped in for his run, we're just like, is he going to do it? Like, and he just, oh man. Like, that was a cool night.
That's fucking rad.
Yeah. Yeah. He killed it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Such a cool guy. I think I've messaged him over the years a couple times, like, or he'd post like a memory of it. And I was like, yeah, man, like I was there. I saw you, like, you know,
yeah.
It kind of gave him props. Yeah.
He deserves them for sure.
Yeah. That was really fun.
That's fucking epic. Epic.
Yeah.
So it was a bit anticlimactic after it happened. Like, it was a fun event.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we all watched it. Everybody, the whole world watched that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Sean does his double
back-to-back doubles, like,
and the weird that McTwist thing he did at the end.
yeah
never been done before or whatever.
And I think, like, so the night of training, like, he just was
didn't he smash his head like super hard?
No, so first, like, all the athletes show up and all the guys and girls, they're all kind of slipping down the drop-in ramp, dropping in carefully, feeling out the pipe. Sean's first run, he pulls in off the top, off the bars as hard as he can, tucks all the way in, pumps the wall, and just boosts all the way down like he's been there before. He's never ridden this pipe before. And he just first run slays it. And then a couple runs later, he's doing his contest run. And then the second night of training, he didn't even show up. Like, he didn't even practice the second night. While everybody else was practicing, he was chilling out. And then he came the next night and won, like...
That's actually amazing.
Like, the level was incredible. Like, where he was and where everybody else was at that time was insane. Like, yeah, there's a huge divide. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I remember the divide.
Yeah.
It's crazy because that divide happened with Terrier earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
And that divide gave so many of us this Terrier's the greatest snowboarder who ever lived vibe.
Yeah, for sure. And it was that same vibe that night. Like it was like watching Michael Jordan play for the Bulls and win the championship. It was the same kind of that you're just like, wow, like look at this guy. Like he's just next level. Like
next level.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That's so sweet.
Super inspirational. Dude. You're just like, holy cow, like that, like Sean runs what he was doing and Justin's personal best were kind of like those two things were standout that night. Like everything else was everything else, but those two guys had a night. Like
how was your sleeps and shit leading up to that? Like, were you having anxiety and bad sleeps and shit like that? Or were you able you were probably working yourself to the bone, working two jobs and doing all the thing.
I think like, you know, Steve was probably stressed. Like it was his contract. Like we were just workers, you know, like we were there to support him. But like, I imagine like he had some pretty, you know, restless nights, I would think. Like, it was all on him. It was, you know, and props to him. Like he pulled it off. Like he assembled a really good team. I think there was 12 of us that he hired to work on that.
Rad.
And he pulled it off. Like it's, amazing. Yeah.
So from that, from those 12 people, like, do you guys all gain a reputation where it's like now you are a kind of next level?
I think so. Like that kind of like
builder
kind of propelled me into like, you're kind of a professional now or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess looking back at that though, or looking at anything I've worked on or built, I think what I did at Seymour was probably like the highlight of my career. Like that's where I feel like I was able to do the most.
So when you come on at Seymour, who are you replacing? Who's the park builder at that time?
I don't really know who was building at the time. I came down, I was at Cypress for 3 seasons. And on my second season, or at the end of my first season, I kind of realized Seymour was kind of the place to be. Like, that's where I wanted to ride. And so I was even working nights at Cypress, and I would drive to Seymour in the morning, and I would go snowboard there. You know, it was starting to get to that point. I was like, well, I should probably just move over here.
Yeah.
So on my days off, I was working 4-on-3 off at Cypress. So once I started helping Seymour with work, I was going over there 2 out of my 3 days off. And I'd binge build for them. I'd go there and work a couple, like, 16-hour shifts, 18, whatever, just whatever it took. I'd go there for 2 days and just binge build, get everything done, and be like, okay, guys, see you next week. It's in your hands now. And then I'd go back to Cypress for my duties there. And it got to the point where they didn't like me working over there, you know, and they called it moonlighting, you know, and like, you can't be moonlighting over there. You can't be building them a better product than we have. And I was like, well, I'm just this kid. Like I'm just having fun. Like I didn't do this to like offend anybody. But I quickly realized that I wanted to be there and not at Cypress. And so I finished the pipe stuff and then I jumped ship and went over to Seymour and worked for them full time and took care of their parks and grooming there for several years. Yeah.
You know, from events that you've done and from Seymour, Ben Bilock.
Yeah.
You guys are of the same sensibility.
Yeah. Like Ben's awesome.
Building things perfectly.
Yeah. Ben's a builder for sure.
Yeah. No point in building something that's not perfect.
Yeah. He's incredible. Yeah.
So was he riding in there back in that was when he was off being a fucking
He was off being pro. A pro. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Like I didn't meet Ben until a bit later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was at Seymour, I guess, that was kind of like the Party Snake era. There was a lot of those guys around. Duffacy was around. You'd see Devin around. You just see a rider that was so talented and had such good style. And you're like, oh, that's probably Devin, you know? And like, couldn't really see his face, but you're like, that's got to be him. Like, nobody else looks like that, you know? Like,
it's unbelievable how he could just turn down the mountain, just be doing turns.
Yeah.
And whatever he's doing is like, you're like, that's kind of sexy or something. What the fuck is up with that?
Yeah, or just why how well so he knows good? The mountain. Like,
yeah. His little, like the little, even just little side hits between side hits.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That you're like, oh, I don't even think I can hit that.
Yeah.
Like, how is that even possible that he's doing that? Yeah. It's cool to see Devin at Seymour.
Yeah.
They go hand in hand.
Oh, amazingly. Yeah. And like in Seymour, it was a really cool opportunity for me because they wanted me, well, they had the ridership that would allow me to build these, you know, difficult features or creative features or crazy, whatever you want to call it. But like, the riders had so much skill there, and they're just like, yeah, build, do more of that, you know? And when I was at the other mountains, they just wanted a park. They didn't really care if it was standout or if it was special. They just wanted like your standard, like a medium jump, a box,
you said
a
rail, you know? You, like, you said something very interesting there, because it's like, they don't have the riders. Like all the best riders were riding at Seymour.
Yeah. At that time, that was like, that was the hub, you know? I guess that's maybe why I was drawn there. Like, yeah, it was just such a special place, and the terrain just speaks to it so well. So it made it easy.
Yeah.
But having the riders and the support there, and just from the management and the ownership there, they're like, no one told me no or stop, or like, they're just like, yeah, more of that, you know? Like, and so, and it, you know, I was doing it for personal reasons too. Like, I, you know, when I'm done building, I want to go ride it. Like,
that really came through.
Yeah.
Cause I rode Seymour at that time. Maybe not at the Party Snake time, but like while you were up there, because how many years were you up there?
I was there. I started working there part time in would have been 2009, and I was there till 2013 was my last season there.
Yeah.
So I was there for a while. It was a good stint. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really good. It was just in the guys I was able to find and hire too. Like, I had a great crew. Like, you know, I'm just a guy in a cat, but there's the muscle on the ground that's like digging the stuff in. And a lot of the ideas, like, I can't think of everything. Like, I lean on my guys, and, you know, we're always sketching stuff on the whiteboard, or they're bringing me drawings. They're like, what about this? And, you know, so I had a really talented crew, and some of them were multiple years. Some of them came and went, but like, I was pretty lucky to have the guys I had. Yeah.
That's super rad. I remember the jump line going from kind of like, I don't want to say total shit, but it was like janky. It looked janky. It wasn't always right. Mm-hmm. You know, the takeoffs and landings, not 100%. And then the stuff at the bottom was always just passion, hand built. Somebody took their board and made like a little transfer or a corner, or a lot of times you ride up and then a little wee jump or whatever up into the train.
Yeah, we definitely took it to kind of another level for those years when I was there.
Yes.
And I guess the timing was good, like with the Olympic cycle, like there was a lot of sponsor money flowing through to help fund a lot of that, you know, to pay for cat time and features and probably wages for the guys.
Yeah,
who were some of the big
sponsors at that time that were sponsoring the park?
So Nike was huge.
Nike.
You know, we were a ski hill in Vancouver during the Olympics that didn't have like a major corporate snowboard sponsor, really, you know?
Right.
And so Nike kind of came in and hooked us up, and because they wanted to be on the scene.
Those features were sick too.
Yeah.
And they built that little, you know, whatever it is.
The hut there.
The hut.
Yeah. So all the programming ran out of that.
Yeah. That was really, I remember the transformation of Nike coming on, building that sick shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause they fabricated it. Like,
So Darren Schmitz built all that. He had a company. I don't know if he's still around. I don't know what Darren's doing. I haven't talked to him in a while, but he was Snowpark Solutions.
Cool.
He did stuff for Hemlock. He built stuff for Seymour.
Sick.
He had some talented welders working for him. Like, he was around doing that for quite a while. So he built all those Nike features. He built all those Monster features.
Oh yeah. Monster was another one.
Yeah.
You guys had the Monster van up there for a while.
We had the Monster van. We had the big propane tank.
Oh yeah. You know,
we had all those tubes. One year I requested an excavator for the season just to carve up the snow in the park. So it was kind of fun. I got to use the excavator and I would just stash it off to the side in the park where it was appropriate. And then when I needed it, I would just bump it out of the snow and carve out, you know, whatever we were doing.
We got the nudies walking behind us here. Hot tubbers. That's Dan. Thanks, Dan, for letting us record in your space here.
Thanks, Dan.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sick. So yeah, it seems to me like, you know, you're the main builder in SEMA. You come down, you work for 3 years on the Olympic half pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you're dipping your toe in at Seymour.
Yeah.
And by the time you get hired there full time, you've already got like park building under your belt at SEMA, and your confidence is building, and now there's money. And you're getting like fucking actual support to build like sick shit.
Yeah.
I forget how great those parks were.
It was amazing.
Like remember the step up like
the step up in Nut House is
God.
The step up in Nut House is like legend. Like, yeah, that's an old feature that was built. You know, that was
Derek Scott made that up.
Yeah. Like if you watch Never Trust a Man with a Mustache, like it's in that movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what I was getting at was your building ability. It's like luck is when opportunity meets preparation. You've been preparing for this since you were a little kid.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And now you actually you're at like one of the raddest spots in the world for freestyle features. You've got the people that will actually use them.
Yeah.
And you've got the skills to fucking build this awesome stuff.
Well, and the management and the owners at Seymour, like they fully supported it. Like,
yeah,
it was great. Like working for Eddie was the best. Like he's so approachable. Like I could sit down and have breakfast with him in the morning and talk about shop, you know, and at other Hills I worked for, you could never talk to the general manager. Like there was a pecking order and you'd never get beyond your department manager. So
right.
It was really cool to be able to talk to the owner and just talk shop and pick his brain. Like, what do you want? Like, what are we doing? You know? And it was, and just, the management meetings we would have and just the information sharing, like he's a really smart businessman and has a really talented crew around him. And during those years, it really showed for sure.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
What were some of your most favorite, features that you built?
Oh man. Yeah, definitely the Nut House Park, like the step up for sure. Some of the stuff I did for Sandbox. So Sansalone, he would always request like a private spring build for the Sandbox movies. And so I got to go and dream something up and build stuff for those guys. So those were always kind of standout. You know, we did the Corey Pease over the Make Peace Gap. That was like a throwback to like Wes and that, you know, that rad shot with him with no shirt on hitting the Make Peace Gap. And then we put the Corey Pease in and it was a little crazy. Like it was kind of scary. Like they were tall and gnarly, you know?
Well, also didn't you groom down the fucking,
so I took a cat down Devil's Drop and you tell people that they're like, no, that's impossible.
Right.
But on a big snow year, when stuff fills in and if you farm enough snow, I basically filled that void and created a snow slope and I drove the cat down. It was steep. Like I definitely like kind of skated down it, but I did it. Like I wasn't driving on rocks. I was driving on snow.
That's amazing, dude.
Yeah. It was, I don't know if that's ever been done before.
Oh like, God.
Probably
no.
not. Eh?
Come yeah. on. Yeah. No, absolutely yeah. not.
So that's like, that's kind of a claim to fame thing, I guess there. Like I drove a cat down Devils, you know?
Yeah. That's pretty badass.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
So yeah, some of my favorite things you built were like, I didn't even hit it, but the cashin, the way that you built it up that year.
I built cashin up huge that year. Like I built insane. The landing even. Like it was a it was a big build. I didn't ever put a tiller on it. It was a cat track blade build and then we just let it snow on it and we built cashin up real good.
Yeah, it's never been built like that.
No, since. Kearns too. Like we Kearns. I pushed that up pretty well too.
Oh yeah. Kearns was it, that big wide takeoff.
Yeah.
That was so
even
fun.
Compression, you know, like
we'd
shape that pretty good. But I that lodge jump line was something special, you know?
Yep.
Just the way that the sun comes up in the morning, that those landings get morning sun and just the color and stuff and the way Baker lights up and just that whole scene, like hitting those jumps and looking towards the Fraser Valley and seeing Baker. That was really cool.
That was really special. Yeah. They haven't had anything down.
And those are big jumps. Like we had people coming down from Whistler to hit them and like,
yep.
It was a popular spot. Like it was really, really fun. Yeah.
It really does go to show you build it and then people show up.
Yeah. Like I remember, the park was closed one day. It was midweek, I think. And we had it closed. We were rebuilding some rails or resetting some rails or something. And Charles Beckinsale showed up, like the best builder on the planet, you know, and he was kind of a sponsored rider still at the time. And he was in Whistler riding and working. Well, he showed up and wanted to film on the red ledge and like hit some stuff. And so we gave him special permission. We're like, yeah, the park's closed, but like you're here, you made the trip. Like, yeah, get after it, you know? And so that was the first time I met him.
Brad.
Yeah. That was really cool. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say they haven't ever built the lodge stuff ever again. Really?
Not really. I think there was a few attempts, but
the last time there was anything amazing over there, I didn't even know this. You came up and helped build that high standard.
Yeah, I built this to high standard.
That was so fun. What a rad build. What
that was
cool,
super fun, yeah.
Cool, just super spring vibe.
Yeah.
Seymour, everybody's up there.
Yeah, that was a fun event.
Epic.
Yeah, really epic. Fun event, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping I can, well, I, I'm hoping I can do a few more builds there in the future. Like it's just that coastal snow, you know, like when it's just perfect and sticky and stackable, like
right.
Some people hate it, but like when you want to stack snow, that's the place to be. Like, yeah.
What about the fact that you could build a perfect park and then because it's the coast, you get 2 feet overnight. Now you're like full reset.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Like a park you spent so much time on.
We used to set stuff pretty tall. Like, I don't know if you remember, like, you know, we'd set a down rail, it'd be like knee height, get on. But then within one storm, it'd be ankle height, you know? So like we try to set ourselves up for success, like put stuff real high. And, you know, people be like, why is it so high? We're like, nah, just give it a day or two. It'll come back to reality. Like, and then within a couple more days, it's completely buried and you're resetting the whole park. And quite often those resets, we would change everything. If you're going to dig it out, you might as well just mix it up and redo it a different way, like rather than keep it the same all the time.
Yeah, I remember feeling like there was a lot of variety in what you were doing.
It changed a lot. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes like we had, you know, negative feedback. People were often like, oh, you changed it. Like I was just getting a trick on that.
Right.
I was going to come up next week.
Right.
And now it's gone, you know, and it's gone forever. Like it's snow. It's not concrete. It's not a skate park. Like,
totally.
Yeah. So we did get some complaints and we had a lot of contests back then and they always wanted different builds.
Of course.
Quite often it was the contest that forced our hand to like make those changes too.
So, I'm a change it guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the variety is more fun.
I think so. Yeah.
Although I can see where having some staples, like having a favorite jump.
Or like if you're just a weekend warrior, you only get to see that park once a week or something.
True.
Where if you're there 5-6 days a week, then yeah, within a week you might have hit it enough times. But if you're only hitting it on a Saturday, every Saturday, then you might be disappointed.
Yeah. 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 I remember being really, really stoked on what they were doing at Mount Hood.
Mm-hmm.
The builds were everything, all the lines were clean, everything was marked out nice.
Yeah.
But also the jumps and features would go in what seemed like a progression of like small to big in each of the parks.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. I felt like you could show up at Mount Hood and sometimes your first run was your best run.
Yeah.
Because it was very intuitive, you know? Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I come back and be like, fuck, the first jump's the big one.
Yeah.
And then you got to dump a bunch of speed.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're going to air to flat on the second one if you think it's getting bigger because it's actually getting smaller. So, yeah, but then I realized Mount Hood in the spring would have 30 people a day session these things.
Yeah.
Seymour in the spring would have
hundreds. Yeah.
Thousands, maybe. Even
the amount of laps. And
yeah.
The hot laps on Mystery were insane. Well, it even Lodge, like,
bam,
too.
Bam, bam,
just,
bam, bam,
you know,
bam,
just
bam.
Continuous.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's really difficult to maintain features
that are perfect. Well, that's the thing. Like, to build, it's one thing. And it's really fun to build because it's new and it's fresh and it's this new shape. But to maintain it and keep it consistent, that's really hard. And it's really important, you know, to keep it the same all the time. Like, you can't have riders showing up every day and it's different. Like, they want to trust the build. They want it to ride the same as it did the day before, if it's been the same feature.
Yeah.
You know, so the maintenance is pretty important. Like, you know, you don't want to hurt people. Like, you want people to trust the build and trust the speed. And it's like a game of momentum. Like, you want the roller coaster to stay on the tracks, you know? Like, so it's kind of, people are ask me like, oh, do you do a lot of math? Or like, how do you figure this stuff out? And a lot of it's just experience riding and building. But it's fun. Like, sometimes I'll tell people I played a lot of Line Rider, you know, remember that game Line Rider?
I do.
You're the penguin on the toboggan.
Totally.
It's the same thing though. Like, does he land smooth or does he crash? You know, and it's the same thing in the park. Like, you want those touchdown landings. And I think as I get older, you know, I've got an ankle injury I've been sporting for a while and the transitions just need to match up that much better depending on like how my joints are feeling, you know, like, yeah, that's pretty important.
So how do we get you back to North Van?
Just a phone call, probably an email, you know? Yeah, it happens. Like, it depends. Like, hills builders come and go. Like, they'll have big years where they've got somebody that's invested and then that person moves on or changes careers and then they don't have a builder and then they struggle. And a lot of that's due to just poor wages in the industry. Like, like park builders and cat operators should be getting paid more. Like it's a serious job and they're often taken advantage of because of their passion or whatever. But if it paid more, you'd have people that would stick out those careers and become talented builders and, you know, and continue to build their experience. But what happens is you'll get guys that'll do it through their, maybe through their 20s. It doesn't pay, you know, they want to grow up and buy a house or whatever. And so they're like, oh, I got to go to university. I got to get a quote unquote real job.
Yeah.
But driving cats and building parks is a real job, but it should pay like one, you know. And so I don't know how you do that. You know, the price that lift passes cost these days, I'm sure the park builders could get paid a little more for what they're doing in a cat. And the risk liability and the responsibility put on those guys, it should come with the pay because it is... How would you say that it's a lot of responsibility. Like you do lose sleep over it. Like, you know, you build a big jump for a high level rider or a contest and it weighs on you a lot. Like, you know, you don't just go home and be like, oh, you're not like, oh, the whistle blew, I'm going home. Like, you know, you might not go home that night. You might be in the cat all night trying to do this perfect thing, right? So
yeah, man.
And that should come with the pay to reflect the effort put in, you know.
I don't think the job you do is actually a job. Like I think most resorts undervalue their cat people by a lot. What you just said is so succinct.
Yeah.
It's like fucking, I don't know, put a rail, make a jump, just
do that thing.
Yeah,
you know,
just
like,
go.
Yeah, so people can take pictures on it and it's like,
right.
But it can be dangerous. It can be really safe. It can be designed and built really well, but that comes with experience. But how do you retain experienced operators if you're not paying them well enough? You know what I mean?
Right.
How do you get them to take it serious if you're not paying them well enough? You know,
right. So and as a snowboarder who experiences those mountains,
yeah.
I'm not even conscious of the fact that the Tyler parks at Seymour that was when they were my favorite parks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I don't consider that. When I'm thinking about it, I'm not like, get Tyler back. I wouldn't have said that before, you know, spending a few days with you hearing about how fucking meticulous you are and what you're willing to do, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You're going, they're allowing me to continue to build.
Yeah.
I did a 26-hour build.
Yeah.
And they just let me do it.
Yeah.
Which is like,
well, they let me do it. Like no one was telling me to do that.
Right.
But no one was telling me not to do it.
Right. Because the build was epic.
Yeah. And you get into it and like,
yeah.
And you could say maybe it was like a selfish endeavor because I was building it for myself as well. Like I want the jump ready because I want to hit it too. You know, I'm not trying to clock out and just go home and go golfing or something. Like I want to get this done so I can ride it with my buddies. Like that was the main motivation. Like, and I guess the motivation, like, yeah, money can motivate you, but sometimes the payment doesn't have to be money. It can just be like a good time. And that's kind of where that came from.
Yeah, man. That's so sick.
Yeah.
That's super sick.
And it was pretty cool. Like we had some amazing times there. Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
No, yeah.
Pretty special.
And the friends, that's the thing too. You were a part of the crew. You were a part of...
Oh yeah. We were ripping. Like
you were a part of not just the park crew, but also the Seymour Bro crew. That was
It was the whole there. Culture, community, all the rider. Like we all knew each other. Like we were always boarding together. Like it was super fun.
Did you ever connect with the Baked Salmon? Like were you up that didn't happen when you were there.
That didn't happen when I was there. The year I came down and did the Vans High Standard, I was supposed to work on the Bank Salmon that year.
Yeah.
But then that was the COVID thing. And then, so it didn't happen.
Oh yeah. It ended.
Or it did. No, they canceled it. And I was supposed to.
But then they went up and they hand built it.
They built it. But I was supposed to do two build trips that year and it was only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we went and lived in no man's land on the Alaska border and just went snowmobiling and snowboarding instead. Yeah. So that worked out.
And you come up to the ECS, your friends with Evan.
Yeah.
And did that start from those park days?
Yeah, I met Evan when I was building there, you know, and he was always filming. He was always on the camera taking photos, like, yeah, super talented guy. So yeah, I met Evan there during that time and we're still good buddies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He did. He came up and brought some people, shot
he came
an
up
event
to Baldy.
That he did here.
Yeah, he came up to Baldy for my Christmas event and brought some riders and like, it was a lot of, he was on the camera the whole time. Yeah.
That's so fun.
What a cool guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What a good combination. You building a park, Evan coming up and shooting it, bringing people.
Yeah.
Just like good Christmas.
Because I think he kind of knows, you know, Baldy's a bit of a sleeper mountain and like we've never had a night park before. And I think he knew it was important that he came up with some guys just to make sure that people came, you know, because you just don't know. Like,
yeah.
And it was like, it was kind of a last minute event because we didn't have much snow. It was a late season for everybody.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, I wanted to do the event, but I was like waiting, like, well, can I even do it? Is there enough snow? Like, so, you know, I'm welding up new rails and then I'm waiting for snow and then, oh, there's just enough and I'm scraping it up and it's dirty. Oh, but like, but like we did it. Like,
yeah,
it was super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're more in tune with what's going on with the snow than anyone I've ever seen.
For sure.
Because like as riders, we're watching going, hopefully we can fucking ride tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope it's a reset. I hope it's a pow day.
Well, that's the cool thing. If you're in the CAT all night and then you're snowboarding most of the day, like you're spending more time on the resort than anybody else.
Anybody.
Is. Yeah.
Anybody.
And you're doing that every single day, every single week for the entire season.
Yeah.
For 20 years or whatever. So like you're pretty in tune with what's going on when you're doing it.
Like, I like to, when we were talking about it yesterday and you were talking about this, you said that you're actually riding the mountain during the day, watching and looking and at night when you're grooming, you can see where people went and how many people went this way. You can
see everything at night.
Because you actually know what happened.
With the nighttime and then the bright lights of the CAT, you can see every carve. You can see where the wear and tear is, where the snow gets pushed.
Where people are trying to build a side hit, but it's not quite there. Yeah. Maybe if I push just a bit of snow here.
And you see some wacky tracks.
Like, of course,
sometimes you see at night, the wacky tracks. Yeah. Like I'll go in the jump line and it'll be like one of the larges or the XLs. And there'll be like a carve mark that just hooks off the side of the jump midway up the jump. You're like,
ooh.
You're like, whoa, what happened to that guy? Hurt. Like most of the lines are going off the lip, but there's the odd one that's just like, it's like a, you don't even know what happened, but you're just like, you can kind of imagine what went down, you know? Like,
I love that you're this into it.
Yeah.
I really would be surprised if there are many, you know, more than a handful.
There's a few of us out there.
Five
like,
or 10
we all kind of know each other.
Yeah,
or like,
yeah.
If I haven't met them, like we talk on the internet, like, you know, there's some American builders that I talk to and and we'll meet maybe someday or you know it's cool.
That'd be dope.
We kind of like comment on each other's work and you know like we know what's up. Like you can as a builder you can see in a photo or a video like that looks like shit or that works or like
right
you know like you don't even have to see someone ride it. You can just see the geometry and kind of know
like, well I'm thinking event builders sure there's event builders but like passionate like resort builders that's a rare breed.
Yeah, and there's like kind of a difference between just like cookie cutter standard parks and then like creative, flowy, weird stuff that's like, you know, it takes a bit more skill to build it and it takes even more skill to maintain it, you know, and like, and it sometimes confuses people. They're like, well, how do I hit this? And you're like, well, because they kind of often just see like the horse blinder way.
Sure.
But then there's kind of the, you know, the Seymour sort of style. And that influenced my career the most. Like until that point, like, yeah, I was a pretty good builder. I could build jumps. I could put in cool rails. We did some cool stuff. But Seymour and just like who I worked with and who influenced me, that kind of shaped me as a builder. So many guys had so many cool ideas and like we just feed off each other. We'd be in the middle of a build. It was pretty funny. Like the boss would often ask for a drawing. Like I want to design. What are you going to draw? Like, what are you going to do in the park? Give me a drawing so I know what you guys are doing. And he has no idea what it means, you know.
Totally.
And then we'd start doing that, but as we moved snow and new ideas were forming on the spot, and they're like, well, but what if we did this? And then we're like, yeah let's do that. And then quite often, like what the picture was, like maybe the first feature was the same but the rest of it was like totally different.
I love it.
And you'd be like, well, Tyler, like you said you were gonna do this, but this looks a little bit different than the drawing. And we're like, well, we just came up with some new ideas and they were better than the ones we drew, so that's what we did, you know, and you just got to trust me. And
yeah,
like that Nut House Park was something special.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a monster / stepchild kind of effort there. That
killer.
It was really cool. And Stepchild was awesome back then. Like,
yeah,
you know, they put in a lot of effort. They hosted a lot of events. They were giving us boards, you know, like we built custom rails for them. Their team back then was amazing. You know, like
very amazing.
They were on top. Like, it's like, I'm surprised they're not like a mega company now. Like they just had so much support, you know. Like,
it's true, right? Yeah, well, Seymour can make or break companies, right? Dinos, dope boards, like I'm gapping on stuff. Oh yeah, before that, like back in my day, it was like Invasion. There was a time where Invasion just
even Option, I guess, would have been big there. Like, because you had Sansalone there. And you had Duffy on Option, right?
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Endeavor, I'm sure, got a big push from being
up there.
Yeah,
I used to ride Max's. I used to ride Endeavors.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. It's like the scene. It's dope.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about it that's intimidating to me because I'm like a little more on the kooky side, which is fine. Yeah. I'm old. And I was always like, oh, but there's good fall line at Grouse. You guys should come ride Grouse. It's really good. And we could build good jumps like this there too.
Yeah.
But you can't do it without the whole community. And then Grouse grew their own community.
Well, the funny thing back then was there was kind of some, I don't know if it's still like this, but there was kind of like some ski hill beef. Like, you know, like Seymour was like, Grouse sucks. And then, you know, like Cypress was never really in the mix for it. Their park was just kind of, it was just a park, you know, it was fine. It met the basic requirements, but Seymour and Grouse were kind of like a little bit battling, you know, and
definitely.
And some guys were kind of aggressive about it. I never really cared about it in that way. I just, my opinion was sort of like, if we push the level and they're trying to be as good as us and we're kind of battling, it's like at the end of the day, if both mountains just have really good parks, then we're all winning. Like
it's epic.
That was the cool part. We'll push it and then they'll push and then everything just levels up. And
there was a couple of years back where there was a huge Seymour migration in the spring because Grouse would just stay open another 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then they'd have like a spring pass and all these Seymour guys would come over because the fucking park was
kind of like be hanging their heads a bit.
A little,
they'd be talking some smack and then it's like, well, what are you going to do now? This is the only hill open.
I've definitely had a few times where I'm like, we should do something on Grouse. I love Grouse. It's awesome. And then people go, oh, I really want to do it on Seymour. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rob Dow, he's one of the Seymour kids.
Yeah.
You know, like, I get it.
Well, and just that kind of the ambience or whatever you want to call it at Seymour is pretty special. Everything's kind of, the runs are tight and there's good shading. Like the sun doesn't kick the shit out of everything. Like it's
truth.
And then you can kind of like, you could start in the morning on Lodge Park with the sun. And then as the sun came around, you could rotate over to Mystery. You could follow the sun to the sunset. You could go from sunrise to sunset on that mountain and ride two different parks at that time.
Yeah.
And we used to chase the sun that way and it was really cool. But at Grouse, you're just kind of like, you're on a big south facing slope and it's just always melting out, you know, and it's always slushy and, you know, it's like,
and then icy.
And then icy at night.
And then icy, yeah.
So they're kind of victims of the sun there a little bit because they're just a big wide football field in the cut or side cut, you know?
Yeah.
So Seymour is pretty special that way. The way they cut their runs and they didn't overcut trees and like, it's a kind of a cool thing there.
True. It just has roly-poly like Baker style.
Yeah, it's like a mini Baker.
And it's weird because it's in the same coastal mountain range.
Yeah,
but it just is different.
Very
it
different.
Is very yeah. different. Yeah. yeah. Then both other mountains
it's
kind of
like
are
a 10-to-1 scale or something. You know, like it's
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, I often say it. I've probably said it 50 times on the show. Mm-hmm. If Seymour was plunked in any major resort, like all the runs of Seymour were like in Whistler.
It'd just be a tiny little fraction of the mountain.
It'd be part of the mountain, but it would be the busiest part of the mountain.
Yeah.
People would be there 100% of the time. Yeah. This is where our hit run is.
Yeah, it's a special mountain. Like the terrain is, it's really cool. It's really unique. Like to have that much going on that small of a footprint is
it's incredible.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, there's only a handful of resorts that have that kind of reputation that are that's especially that size.
Well, and just that coastal sticky snow too, like those side hits, like here, like it's champagne powder at Baldy, like we're not going to get those coastal sticky
snow. You were making your side hits today and yesterday it was like a streak of mud when you landed one place because it's like
it's dry,
it's bony and dry.
Yeah,
right. But then you've sent it further down. Now there's
another landing,
another landing,
and those different types of snow play to different strengths and weaknesses, right? Like, and you know, on the coast, you get everything from rain to slush to pow, and you just gotta have fun with it all. Where kind of in the Okanagan here, it's dry all the time. It's really cool. Like we get snow, but it just stays fluffy and light.
It's great groomers.
It's really silky. You know?
Yeah. It's great groomers. It's like, it's one of my favorite things. So the first thing is pow, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking properly groomed cold snow.
Good grippy groomers.
It's like very, very close.
Yeah.
It's maybe tied with, with like, you know, West Coast cement, like that nice, like jumpy snow where you can just jump over everything. You can make a, make something out of it and it's not
going to, but just going fast and having really good edge control on like a fresh groomer in the morning. Like,
it's insane.
It's unreal. Like it's fun.
It's insane. Yeah. It's amazing.
And just getting low in carbon and like dragging the hands and you know, like that's a good time. Yeah.
So what's your plan from here? What's, are you like, do you want to talk about Baldy and creating a culture here and bringing bringing people in? Or
I'd be kind of stoked to talk about going back to the Yukon, like because I was at Seymour and I did my whole kind of North Shore thing with the pipe and then Seymour.
Yep.
But then it kind of came time to make some decisions, mostly for my son. Like I would have probably stayed at Seymour for the rest of my life. Like it was a really hard place to leave. Like I remember breaking the news to the owner and the ops manager there. And hey guys, like I've made a decision. I'm going to move back to the Yukon. I want my son to kind of finish high school up there. I want him to like graduate with like with his friends that he had in kindergarten. Like he's only been in North Van from grade halfway through grade 7 to grade 10. So he hasn't been there that long. I want him to like, I kind of wanted to get him out of the city. I want him to get back to the Yukon and become an adult in the Yukon. That was really important to me.
Yeah.
So it was more of a move for family than it was for my purposes. Like I would have just stayed down there. Like I loved it, but like I can find work wherever I, you know, I'm a handy guy or whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, it was most important for the kid. Yeah. So that was, that's why we moved back up north.
Yeah.
And, when we moved back up north, I was pretty excited, like Mount Sema where I started and, you know, I left there on good terms. Like I spent 5 years there and did the Canada Games, you know, so 7 years later, leave North Vancouver, move back to Whitehorse. That summer, Mount Sema claims bankruptcy.
Oh no.
And all their assets are for sale and they're like, mountain's done. We're folding, you know? And I'm like, no, like, I was like, I just came back. Like I can't live in a town that doesn't have a ski hill. Like this is kind of what I do. You know, and I was hoping to maybe get my old job back, you know, like there's no guarantee there, but I was willing to live in Whitehorse and maybe wait till the opportunity came. And then, and obviously like I'm the most qualified person to do that stuff in town. So I'd probably most likely get hired. It was a good, you know, it's bound to happen. So I got involved right away. There's lots of community meetings. How do we save the hill? Blah, blah, blah. And, so I kind of got involved and 7 years had gone by. So a lot of people that were involved now with the hill didn't really know who I was, you know? Right. So I kind of had to prove to them or not prove to them, but like explain to them who I was. And I'm like, hey, I'm this guy. I'm kind of like a professional. I'm really good at building jumps. Like,
right.
If you want to save this hill, like you should probably build some jumps, you know, like it's gone out of business because maybe it's not fun. Maybe it's overpriced. Maybe the hamburgers aren't very good. I don't know, but I do know if you like make snow and let me shape it, it'll be successful. Like we're, you just got to realize what this hill is and what it isn't. And it's a northern hill that gets crappy dry snow. The terrain's not even that good. There's no side hits. People are bored, you know, and you're not making money because of that. So I was like, if we can blow some snow and we can shape some parks and build a fun like snow cross for families and do some events, it might go off, you know.
Brad.
And so we got some money and we got the hill open.
So this is the second time you've done this where you've, the first time you're trying to convince people, look, 1,000 signatures.
Yeah.
Means so we this make is a park.
Round two.
So this like is round two. So, I can't believe this.
So I was there for 5 years and developed a park and then moved away and it kind of crumbled, but like it's, they're at the mercy of whoever's behind the controls of the machine. If they don't have the talent, then the park suffers. Right. So I left. No one really filled the shoes that well. You know, it kind of failed a little bit. Moved back, got involved, got back in the cat, and started building parks again. And then the mountain started like getting better again, and people were like investing in this. It, you know. And I remember asking them, we were kind of hungry to do anything. Like, how can we make this attractive? How can we make it popular? And I was like, well, we've got this bunny hill with this handle toe, rope toe thing. Is like, can we do an early season park and get people up here jamming on some rails and build some little jumps, just get kids up and, you know, open the lodge, maybe get some hot dogs rocking and, you know, open the bar. Like, and the boss is like, yeah, look, the boss is like, well, yeah, let's try it. We'll do it for one Saturday. We'll see how it goes, you know? And I was like, no, I was thinking like we do it every weekend till the mountain opens. Like, they're like, well, we'll see. Like they were kind of doubting it a little bit. Sure. And I was like, well, just give me like, you know, give me 10 hours cat time and a bit of snowmaking and we'll go for it, you know, and we'll get some volunteer diggers to come up and we'll do it on the cheap. So we built this early season park. It's like early November, like probably like first week of November. No ski hills are open yet. And we're continuing to make snow up on the mountain, but we got this little park at the bottom. So we open it up for this public spring park. 110 people show up.
Nice.
Like there's a lineup. It's crowded. Like
that's dope.
There's too many people on the handle. There's so many people on the handle toe. It's like starting to spin out and they're having to tell people like, no, you can, like people aren't using the handles. They're just grabbing the wire. And they're like, no, you got to just use the handles. It's only engineered for like a certain amount of weight. Like,
of course.
Chill out.
Yeah.
But there's 110 people just giving her a ride in this park. And that's when kind of the general manager at the time, Cindy there, she's like, wow, this is something. Like, let's do this every weekend. And I was like, I told you so. Like, duh, it's going to work. Like, kids want to ride jumps and rails. Like
that's, you know, fucking like, incredible, dude.
But the people that are like snow snobs that just want to like carve groomers or ride pow, you're not going to get them till the conditions are good. But right. All these park kids, like it could be like a box on mud and they'll still come hit it. They just can't wait. Like when the skate park closes, they're just at a loss. Like what do they do?
You know? Right. Yeah. Right.
And they're just waiting for snow basically.
Yeah. There's some, that's a crazy thing that happened.
Yeah.
Is that snowboarding came in at a time where skiing was kind of floundering and we were so hungry.
Yeah.
Like we were like hiking up and we're still doing it.
Yeah.
I was hiking up in October.
Yeah.
And I'll be hiking up in July if there's still snow. Totally.
Well, like
it's fucking, we're way more dedicated. So if you make your mountain appeal to these people.
Yeah.
Not only will they show up from here, they'll move from other places. Go, fuck, you know what?
Yeah.
These guys put together a good park. Like you were saying, the kid from Grouse, George, that came up here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he came up because he likes to ride park.
Yeah.
So he drove 5 hours
to get the snow to hit some tubes and a picnic table.
On a small park.
A small park on a magic carpet. But it was worth it because he wanted a board. You
That's
know?
It.
Yeah.
So it's like,
it's real.
Heads up, guys. Heads up, ops.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I know kids that were like, the North Shore didn't have any snow, and there was kids driving up the Coquihalla trying to find snow just so they could build a wacky little cheese wedge and huck their meat and do some flips.
Right.
And then drive all the way back to Vancouver.
But like you say, those powder guys, they're not going until it's fucking good.
But that park, it can thrive, you know? So, and then I also brought back to SEMA kind of the side hit culture that I'd learned from Seymour because it's such a special thing there.
Rad.
And Mount SEMA, you know, their green runs aren't carved around the side of a mountain where there's these big side banks. It's just like, it's kind of a mellow mountain. And at the edge of the run, there's just kind of nothing. It's just the forest or whatever. So there aren't side hits. So I just started, you know, we made a lot of snow there. It's cold weather and we have snowmaking. So I would just manufacture side hits wherever it was appropriate. Like if there's the corner of a run where no one's really riding, well, there's going to be a hip there. Or, you know, if there's like a little chunk of bedrock outcrop or a big ugly stump from a tree that never got removed, well, we're going to cover that and make a little volcano thing. And so like we called them safety features because we were essentially making the mountains safer by covering hazards with snow were like also features, you know, but
it's incredible.
And it was cool because a lot of people are intimidated by the park because there's a pecking order at the top. It's like, are you going, call your drop in? It's all serious, right? Like
that's true.
And people are like, oh, I can't go in the park. Like I'm not good enough, you know? So what the side hits did was it just allowed people to just kind of flow and ride around and just kind of choose to hit things when they wanted to, if they wanted to. And there wasn't that pressure with like the big group at the top. Like, are you going? Like, what are you doing?
Going in a gate, all the
warnings. It could be that there could be a bit of pressure, right? And then sometimes, and that's even dangerous because riders that aren't skilled enough get forced into hitting features they might not even want to hit yet, but they feel like they've got to do it and they've got to like perform at a, because everyone's watching, you know?
100%.
Yeah, so those side hits and like those safety features, now you've got like little kids doing it. You got moms and dads doing it because they're like, oh, look at this thing that was never here before. And maybe it's just a roller, but it's like, it's better than the run was before. You take a flat run that's just flat and you're just kind of like standing on your skis or board doing nothing, or you're making a turn out of boredom. And then you like shape the run a bit and it's like, well, look at this. And then the next year you shape it a little bit different and the run's constantly evolving every year. It never gets stale and you get people coming back. Cause like, imagine going on the same road trip every weekend. Like
right,
you'd probably stop doing it, you know. And the ski hills are like that. Like,
yeah,
if it's your local hill and it's only got 6 or 7 runs and you grow up there as a child, how long are you going to ride it for before you're kind of over it, you know, and you start doing something else? But if you can like mold and manipulate that terrain, it keeps it fresh and interesting, and it's good for your mind. Like, it's like you're reading different terrain. It's the same run, but the guy in the machine made it cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's kind of how we saved the mountain a little bit. Like, you know, like it just made it more interesting. People are like, oh, I'm coming back. Like,
rad.
And, you know, and every week you just kind of like add a little something more, you know, and it makes the grooming more interesting. You can just drive around and groom and just like a farmer. It's, yeah, it's hella boring.
Right.
Or you're just constantly like, as you're blading, you're like, oh, a little more snow on this roller tonight. And you keep going in the next night a little more. And it just evolves over days and weeks and months into this like cool project. Right. So
that's so,
so it makes the job more appealing as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so fun.
And so because we're up far north and we can make snow early. So the preseason public thing, it ended up turning into this preseason private thing for teams and athletes. And it blew up into this whole thing, which was really, really interesting. Yeah. How was just something
that,
so
that
small.
That was the, where you invited Jess and Ben to in the beginning.
Yeah. So I built that little park, yeah, and then I was on Facebook, I think. And I saw that, obviously I followed Jess cause she's a cool snowboarder girl and just kills it.
Yeah.
And I'm checking out what she's doing, and she's shoveling some arena snow and setting up a little rail on some grass. And I was like, you're like a professional. Like, you should be riding a park. Like, so I messaged her, and I didn't know her very well. Like, I think I'd maybe met her a couple times early season boarding down at the old Ridge Chair at Seymour, where everybody kind of jams out early.
Totally.
I'd seen her there before. And so I messaged her. I was like, hey, like, would you want to come up to Whitehorse and come ride SEMA? Like, we've got a full park built with a rope tow. And she's like, yeah, I would come up. Like, can I bring another rider and a filmer? I was like, probably. So I was like, I think we could just fly you up. I was like, I think the hill would just pay for it. So I approached the general manager at the time, and I was like, hey, I got this idea. Like, could we just fly this awesome snowboarder up with her friend and a filmer? And then, you know, they'll make an edit for us or get us some photos, and like, we'll benefit from them being here because of who they are. But like, they'll benefit coming up because they need to be riding better features. They're shoveling snow and grass, you know? So it worked out. So they agreed to it. That, you know, the Hilda wasn't sure if they wanted to agree to it, but I kind of forced it on them a little bit. I was like, no, just do it. Like, take the chance. And so we flew them up. They stayed at my house. We brought them up to the hill, and they had an awesome time, and they rode this park, and then they got to meet all the kids, and we had like a public event, and, you know, and it was really cool for a lot of the young female riders in town to see someone like Jess. There's a million dudes you could fly up and be like, oh wow, look how good this guy is. But to bring her up and influence a lot of the young girls in town, like, there wasn't a big ridership of park girls, you know, like it's definitely smaller than the guys.
Yeah.
And bringing her up definitely inspired a lot of female riders to be like, oh, I can do that. Like, she's doing it. I can do that. And a good friend of mine, Crystal LaGoff, I don't know if you know her.
I know the name.
Yeah. She's a really talented rider, and she's a Whitehorse local. And I know personally, like, when she met Jess and got to see Jess ride, that inspired her to kind of like pursue a snowboarding career as like
so
a
cool
professional. And she's still doing that to this day.
Yeah.
And she's told me like, that's what was kind of the catalyst for that, was just that one person coming up.
Of course.
You know,
And that's you like basically putting it on management. Like, we should,
this is
do
important.
This.
Like, this is, yeah, cool, you know?
Yeah.
And just who those people were. And then, so we also had Ben come up.
So
Ben Bullock comes up, and like, he's not a household name to people that don't know snowboarding, but to people that know snowboarding, he's the guy. Like, he's, you're like, whoa, Ben's here. Like, what the hell? Like, so that was pretty cool. Like, yeah, really cool to have him come up, and like, he'll never stop snowboarding. Like, he'll ride from the time the chair opens or the lift opens till it closes, or like, he's on the rake tuning something and helping you. Like, he's just there to contribute. Like,
best guy.
Really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Best.
And
guy.
Then Carla came up to film, and like, best person to have there on the camera, you know?
Sick.
So it was just a really cool thing. They came up for maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 days, but just such a cool.
And that's cool what vibe. Led to like early season team shoots there.
Yeah. So once we did that, and then they made that edit, and that kind of got put out on the internet.
Yeah.
Maybe a week or two later. No, not two, like a week later, my phone rings. It's an unknown number that I've never seen. And I answer it, and it's Mark Fawcett. Nice. And he's like, Tyler, he's like, you guys have a park? Like, what's going on up there? He's like, I just saw some video and you guys have like a park and there's no snow wow. anywhere else. And he's like, well, what else can you guys do? I was like, well, we could probably do lots of things if we had people that wanted to do it and pay for it and come up here. And so he came up that following spring with somebody from Own the Podium, which is like a big funding
yep.
For athlete development. So they came up and toured the hill with us and looked at potential and possibilities. And the very next year, we had our first teams coming up to train. And, you know, we were building snow cross courses for the para team. We were building jumps for like next gen and like provincial teams. We had ski racers coming up. So like a wide variety of like all kinds of stuff. And it just turned into this awesome thing where like, you know, the mountain was alive. Like, you know, like we had this preseason thing and like, it was really good, you know? And then that built to the point where we attracted, you know, national team riders, you know, and this goes back to doing dirt work again. So we're doing this all with man-made snow. And I was like, hey guys, like if we move some dirt, we don't have to make as much snow. We can open this even sooner. It makes life easier for us. So they hired me to come in and we had an old in-ground half pipe from the Canada Games. We had a ton of dirt right beside where the park was. So we went in with a big excavator and some rock trucks and bulldozer. And I kind of orchestrated this whole dirt work project. And then that's where our big jump line came from. And then we built the big air. So there's all this dirt infrastructure's there. And it'll always be there now. So like SEMA will have quality jumps for the rest of time, basically. And then, so Max Perot came up and he saw some video of the team's training and he thought the jump looked good. He heard the jump was good. And so he showed up and he's here to train. And so like, you know, I'm just this small town builder. And then now I'm hanging out with Max Perot and he's sessioning my big air jump and blowing all our minds. Cause like, you know, it's one thing to watch it on a video or watch X Games or whatever. But then when you're standing on the knuckle watching that guy snowboard, he doesn't make mistakes. Like, it's incredible. Like,
yeah, that's nuts.
It's unreal. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And so Max coming up led to the whole national team coming up. He came up on his own for a few years. And then the rest of the team was like, hey, that looks like a good place to go. And so we were at like the best riders on the planet or training at Little Mount SEMA and Whitehorse, you know.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
Because we're just a few plane rides away. Like, it's nothing. Like, those guys will fly anywhere.
They have to fly like, where they have to fly.
They'll just go there. Like, yeah. They're rock stars, right? Like, they just go where they want.
Yeah.
So there's a jump somewhere and it's good. They're just, now they're there, you know?
That's amazing that good, solid jumps early season are so rare.
Yeah.
That you could just build a few and now you've attracted
Half in
the friggin' world.
The only place to hit jumps of that size is in Europe. Like, you've got to go to Stubai or you've got to go to Saas Fee.
Yeah.
You know, the earliest jumps in North America previous to SEMA was Colorado, and they were even pretty late, you know, coming out of the gate. Like, it was more catered to ski racing, and it wasn't about jumps, you know, and so we kind of got on the jump program. Yeah.
That's rad.
And it was really successful. It was a really fun time to be there.
So with you being here at Baldy, are they still keeping that up?
They're doing kind of a version of what it was like.
They're making
something work.
But it's not,
it's not what it was. No, it probably never will be. Those are some crazy hours to put in. Like it's a big task to do that. You know, be pretty committed. Well, it was the point where like I was working so much. I bought a travel trailer and put a wood stove in it and parked it in the bush at the hill because I didn't have time to commute home and have a normal life because I was working so much and like doing this thing and like proving this could work. And, you know, so it was kind of a personal sacrifice to like
make it. But then it almost can't work without you. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or somebody of that caliber has got to come in, you know, they've got to headhunt that person and find
them,
you know,
and pay them money.
And pay
the
money.
Like that's the thing is like you proved you've done so much concept proving.
Yeah.
But they still don't see.
Yeah.
As it trails off and people stop being interested in their mountains.
And then that comes back to paying builders. Like, you know, if there was like more money in it, you'd have more people pursuing that as a career. And then those people would be easy to find, but we're not, you know? No. So it's a flaw in the industry for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind talking about the other ski hills in the Yukon.
Please.
Yeah.
Everything that you said so far has been captivating. I love it.
Yeah.
I love how articulate you are about your passion and how authentic you are in this space.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like you're aware of it, but it's almost like you're unaware of how special and important you are to, mm-hmm. to the snowboard community at large. And then even the resort community, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's like almost overwhelming how like to see a resort have you on staff, for example, and then just not be listening to you would be like, what a waste of a resource.
It's funny too, because in the early years at SEMA, like the dirt work I wanted to do and the parks I wanted to pursue, those were all ideas I presented as a younger guy, but nobody would take it seriously. Oh, why would we do that? Like, we're not going to do that. But then you go and do like an Olympics and you build some standout parks at Seymour and then you move home and then you tell them the same idea you presented 10, 15 years before or whatever, or 10 years before. And now they want to do it. And it's like, this is the same idea that like 25-year-old Tyler told you about, but now, you know, like, but maybe I'm a bit older and a bit wiser and I got some more credentials. And so
you're
now
pretty
like,
tenacious.
We're doing it now. And it's like,
you're pretty tenacious.
It's an old idea.
You know? I've definitely seen it up here where it's like, hey, maybe we can move the light in the park. And the guy goes, I don't think so. And 10 minutes later, you're like, so we're moving the light in the park, right?
Yeah. Like I don't, and that was this, that's happened at a few different places. Like I don't see, I just see it as like, I just see solutions really. Like I don't, if there's a, something is like, well then how can we do it? Like, don't say no. Like you're just saying no, 'cause you maybe don't understand or you just don't care. But it's like, but we could do it if we did that. Right. And then, well, yeah. And it's like, well then let's just do that, you know, or we don't have the money. It's like, well then I'll go find the money. Or like, well, we can't do that because of this. It's like, well, then we'll get that thing to do that thing. Like, there's always a solution. Like, if we're just talking about like snowboard parks, of course we can do it. Like, we're just talking about moving some dirt.
Yeah.
We need a bulldozer. Yeah. I know people that own bulldozers. Let's go get one.
Let's just go get it.
And then this guy might have some fuel to donate and then we'll move the dirt and then it'll save us money in the long run.
He's got a kid who likes to hit the park. Let's make the park better.
Yeah, there's always somebody. Yeah. You just got to ask around. You just, you know, but for most people, that's not their agenda. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not their MO.
It's not their MO. So, like, if you don't have somebody there doing that, it's just not going to happen.
It doesn't.
So, I've kind of figured out the recipe or the steps you need to go. It's like, oh, we don't have money to buy steel. It's like, there's probably a recycling junkyard down the road. We'll go find some pipes or some tanks. We'll buff them out. We'll paint them and we'll chuck them in the park. Like, this isn't hard. Like, you know, like, so it's the recipe is fairly simple if you know what to do and you have some experience, I guess.
So tell me about other Yukon ski resorts.
So in the Yukon, there's three ski hills. There's one in Whitehorse, which is the big one with the chairlift. There's one in Watson Lake, which is southern Yukon. It's a community of about 900 people. They've got a really cool hill there called Mount Machin, named after a guy named Hans Machin. He was a German ski racer. He developed the hill because he was passionate about ski racing and he wanted to teach people how to ski and ski race. So it's named after him. There's two T-bars there, one to the other. They got a beautiful lodge. The plants and trees are really neat. There's a lot of birch. It's all kind of pine and birch. It's a really kind of special area. Kind of, we called it mini Japan for a while because it's all birch trees and you're in like this like.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a really neat hill. So, and then Dawson City has Moose Mountain up on the dome. It's a T-bar hill as well. So with my, just with the momentum I had at Mount SEMA, there seemed to be interest at the other hills. Like, well, we want a park too. Like we want to participate in this thing. And, you know, people from the communities are coming to Whitehorse because it's kind of a big hub. It's the big city in the Yukon and they're going to Mount SEMA and they're just like, well, how do we get this? You know? And it's like, well, I can come build it for you. And we're fortunate in the territory. There is a lot of government funding for recreation and community development. So like, and especially for nonprofits, which all those hills are, all the ski hills in Yukon are all nonprofit.
Cool.
And so they can just apply for these grants and it's just a matter of like filling out some forms and then we just go and do the work. So then, you know, went to Moose Mountain, did dirt work there, built them boxes and rails, and then go there in the winter and install everything and teach them how to build it, teach them how to maintain it, host an event and be like, here you go. Like, it's just like, it's done for you, you know? And then a couple of years later, Mount Machin, they're like, well, they contact me. They're like, well, we kind of want a park too. It's like, so do a site inspection, check it out. Oh yeah, we can move this dirt here. We could do that. This run's appropriate for it. You know, so you just got to look at the terrain and see what they're willing to do or what they're willing to let you do. and then come up with a plan. And so yeah, Mount Machen's got a park program as well now.
Sick. Yeah.
And then now the kids from the communities, like that's feeding Mount Sema now. So now you've got these communities with these kids that are like learning there. They want to go to the big hill and ride the big jumps or ride the big chairlift. But those are kind of feeder hills for Sema. So Sema's thriving based on the communities learning and coming there. And then, you know, like places like Baldy or resorts down here, like we benefit from those people learning because they want to come to us.
Yeah.
You know, so like the little hills, people think they're unimportant, but those hills support the big hills. So it's all connected. Like, yeah, yeah. People aren't just staying home at the same hill for their whole life. Like they want to go explore other places. So they all kind of interconnect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's rad.
Yeah. So the Yukon's got like a pretty cool park scene. Like all three mountains are, it's going, you know, like they're doing it. Yeah. And so I was able to do that in my time there. Like I spent 8 years back in the Yukon after I left Seymour. And in that 8 years, developed all three territory hills.
That's amazing.
To park programs and taught people how to do it. And then now I've moved away, but they've all got that now. So, you know, I can go back up there and visit. And it's like, cool, you guys all have parks and kids are shredding. Like,
so what's going to happen, in your opinion, to these Vail resorts that are just going on bottom line and saying, parks don't make us money. We aren't going to waste time making parks. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you see in the future for an entire conglomerate like that that's trending more towards paying for parking, expensive meals, you know, seasons passes versus day tickets, all that sort of stuff.
You know, in the big resort thing, it ends up becoming elitist. Like it becomes a place that, you know, common people can't attend anymore. Like, you know, like you just can't afford to go. Like you're gonna go to Whistler with your family for a day. Like what's that going to cost? Like you got to save up. Like that's a big deal, you know, where these little community hills, it's affordable. Like, you know, like the little hill in Dawson, it's 10 bucks. but you have a resort quality park there. Like there's a medium triple jump line. There's a snow box. There's a propane tank.
I want to go there.
It's like a little DC mountain lab. It's very much like that. It's just like a little T-bar, short vertical.
Cool.
You can hit like 9 features in a row and you go back on the T-bar and you just,
this is amazing. And it's got a long season because you're up north.
Yeah, the season there can like easily stretch into May. Like,
so no you problem. Think these Vail resorts that are really backing off on making like good parks, you think eventually they will be less popular? That's fucked.
I don't know.
They're too busy.
It'll just be
already.
Like a certain demographic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it'll just end up kind of being elitist, you know? Like the smaller hills will probably thrive because they're affordable. You know, like, and then the bigger hills, like, it'll just be certain people. Like, you just, it won't be attainable for some people, you know?
Yeah, I don't go to Whistler anymore for that reason, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's not attainable for, like, a local person to go there.
Yeah.
It's like they've priced me out.
Well, it's not only the money, it's the crowds, it's the parking, it's the whole experience is just, like, it's not that fun, you know?
Feels bad.
Yeah. And so for that amount of effort and that amount of money, like, you're just better off to go hiking and or buy a split board or some snowshoes or like buy a snowmobile and not stand in lineups and just go with the crew that you want to go with.
Yep.
Cause like snowboarding, like when I started snowboarding, like, yeah, we were riding the T-bar at Moose Mountain, but like it was only open sometimes. Like if it was 30 below, it wasn't open, but we were still up there hiking, you know? So like you don't need a lift to go snowboarding.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
just like, that's why surfing's so cool is because like once you have the board, you're just laying on it, swimming around, right?
Yep.
And snowboarding's the same thing. Like you just walk up the hill and you just slide down. Like
that's the truth.
So, you know, you don't need a lift. You don't need a lift pass. Like you can just go out with your friends and like build a jump.
Yeah.
Or hike a power run and go free riding. Like,
you know, yeah,
that's free.
This was fun for me to come up here and ride with you at Baldy because it's something I forgot that we could do.
Yeah.
You can go to a less busy resort.
Yeah, they're out there.
You don't have to go somewhere where it's just insane and then play that fucking game of I'm going to get there 2 hours before it opens.
Well, and that's why I'm here. Like, you know, with the experience I have and, you know, I could have probably went and worked for any mountain, but like, I don't want to be at a busy hill. Like I don't snowboard.
It was a great day today.
I don't snowboard to stand in line. Like, I
think I woke up at 8:15.
Yeah.
And the hill opens at 9.
Yeah. If snowboarding
we
was...
We were in the lineup at 10 to 9.
Yeah.
And there was no one in front of us, basically. Mm-hmm. We're the first on the one
side.
Just ride
and then straight, onto the chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing here. Like,
It's a better experience for me personally.
It's a special hill, and like we're fortunate that like we're not close to a big population. Like our catchment area is fairly small. I think it's enough population to like the hill can take over. Like it's not super profitable, but it's enough to stay open.
Yeah.
You know, there's enough community support that the hill does good enough, I guess, you know?
Yep.
And it might not ever be busy because we are just that little bit further away from
pretty far from Vancouver.
Yeah. It's like imagine if Whistler wasn't 2 hours from Vancouver. Imagine it was 5 hours from Vancouver. It wouldn't be as busy, maybe.
It wouldn't, right? Like that's like what, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like Silver Star, when you go there, you're like, why isn't this place busy? Like,
yeah. Crazy. It's just the catchment area is a little bit less population dense. Yeah. You know? Like, yeah. So when we were looking for a hill to move to, we were looking at smaller areas like where we don't have to stand in line and fight for POW days. You know, we're not running to the rope when it opens. Like, I don't want to run. Like, I want to walk. Like,
yeah, you know, man. Yeah, yeah. It's just a different experience. It really brought me back to the beginning of going to resorts.
Yeah.
Where we never even thought about crowds.
Yeah.
We just thought like, how the fuck are we going to get there?
So I got another example for you of a really cool project I got to be involved with. I went to Fort Smith, Northwest Territories, and I built a park for them, and it was for, Arctic Winter Games. And so Arctic Winter Games is this circumpolar region games that they have, and it's all sports. It's indoor sports, it's outdoor sports,
cool,
you know, volleyball, basketball, hockey, table tennis, everything, and snowboarding is also in it. So this little town of Fort Smith got the Arctic Winter Games bid. Jesus. it's a 18 and under games,
so like World Juniors or something.
Yeah, but it's for all for northern communities. So the communities involved, for the places involved, are Yukon, Alaska, Northwest Territories, Northern Alberta, Greenland,
wow,
a little part of Russia, Finland, Sweden
probably, yeah,
Northern Quebec. So it's like it's all northern communities, northern people. So it's really
rad,
cool,
man. That's so rad.
And so Fort Smith wins the bid. I get contacted as a builder to come over there and build them their venue. And so it's pretty neat. So Fort Smith's pretty, it's super flat. And the Slave River's right there. And it's like one of those river valley hills like you'd see in like Edmonton, or, you know, it's small, like a small slope, small vertical, but it'll work. You can use it. So I get hired, I go there, I come up with a plan. They need a border cross, they need a big air, and they need a slope style.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And so I look at the slope and it's workable. And the material on the bank of the Slave River, it's all sandy clay. It's nice material. It's not a bunch of boulders. And so I come up with this design plan. I submit it. They approve it. And then the following summer, I go there and I live there for 3 weeks. And I spend 3 weeks in a bulldozer in a D6. And I sculpt this. And it's a treeless slope. And the cool thing about the slope, it's the old Fort Smith town site. And I think it was in the 60s. There was a big slump in the landscape, and the entire town like landslid down towards the river, and the town was like destroyed. And apparently nobody died because they were all the way at work, but it was like catastrophe. It's this unstable slope. So they removed all the debris, the buildings, whatever. They've rebuilt the town. And so I got to build this park on the old town site of Fort Smith.
Wow.
So while I'm moving the dirt and stuff, I'm finding like the odd chunk of concrete or maybe some rebar or whatever. And sculpted that hill, and I built them a snow cross. And I built them a mini big air. Like, it was for Arctic Winter Games. It's for like community kids. So
I get it.
There was two options. Yeah. There was like a 15 foot and like a 30 foot, you know,
still fun.
Yeah. And then I built them a slope course, you know, and rails, boxes, wall rides, the whole thing. Rad. And then where I built all that stuff was kind of traditionally where their toboggan hill was. So then they asked me to build a toboggan hill.
Yeah. Cool.
So I built this big toboggan hill, and they're like, actually, can you build kind of like a fun one? That's like snaky and cool. Like,
no way.
I was like, yeah, I can do that for sure. So I moving dirt, built them this cool Burmese snake run toboggan hill. And so it was one of the cooler things I ever got to do, because once it was done, we had like a big community celebration, and we had like a big bonfire. We were cooking bannock on sticks. Kids were like climbing on the dirt work, like touching it and climbing on it, and
sick.
And like I built the takeoffs out of dirt because they get such little snow there. It's so dry there.
Yeah,
we couldn't rely on like natural snow to really build anything. So everything that I did out of dirt had to be like within inches of finish, you know. And And then I went back the next year for the test event. There's a local guy in town there that owned a snowcat, and they trucked a whole bunch of snow in from all the city snow dump. Wow. The town is not a city, but from the town snow dump. And they just dump trucks were just showing up, dumping snow over the edge of this drop in on the hill. And I'm dozing it down into the jumps and like,
wow,
it was hilarious. Yeah. And so to this day though, they have a thriving snowboard community there. Like, sick. So there's this cool legacy there that like, there's this infrastructure that showed up. There's no lift. There's no lodge.
Cool.
There's like an Atco trailer with some bathrooms where you can warm up and get changed.
Yeah.
That's it. Because they won't build any buildings there because it's an unstable slope.
Right.
But they'll let you do dirt work for a park because it's just like unusable anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, so we go there and to this day there's, it's called the Slide Zone Shredders is the name of the group there that operates it. It's a amazing bunch of volunteers. And they just have snowmobiles with toboggans and kids just get in, they haul them up, they drop them off, or they hike, and they're still using it to this day. And like, there's a local general store there that sells snowboard equipment now. It's hilarious. It. Like, yeah, yeah. And they never used to. Like, so it's like a little shred town now. You yeah. used to have kind of nothing, you know?
Dude, what yeah. a cool.
Really cool.
Venue, the whole thing.
Yeah. And the Arctic Winter Games was super successful. All the kids came and, you know, there's lots of personal bests that day and all the features were well received, you know? And like, yeah. That's so cool. That was like, that was kind of a highlight one. Like, you know, you could put that up there with like an Olympic pipe or like, you know, like it was
I like that.
Just as good.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that oh, a lot. Yeah. That's yeah. super sick.
So that one's kind of, and it just shows like you don't need the lift. You don't need the lift pass. You just need a slope.
Yeah.
With some dirt work and like some people that want to like get on some rakes.
That actually sounds more fun than a lot of the shit that I've been doing this year. Just yeah. trying to get to yeah. something.
And you're starting to see that happen. Like there's a few communities that are doing that. I think like Williams Lake is going to have like a hike park pretty soon. Calgary is working on something.
Dope.
Because it is, it's like going to the golf course with your snowboard. It's the same thing. Like,
yeah.
You don't need to like the lift pass and the money thing shouldn't prevent people from snowboarding. You know, it's yeah. like you should be able to just go to the skate park and it's free. It should be the equivalent of skateboarding basically.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah. Cause you can buy used snowboard equipment cheap. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no reason that people can't go snowboarding.
So if you're a listener and you were wondering what you could do in your community to make yeah. it more accessible.
Yeah.
And you're like, trying to get the mountain to give you free lift tickets and trying to get all this yeah. gear for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you can find a spot to yeah. build a hike park.
Yeah.
And you get snow.
Or just a hike slope. Like even if you don't want to yeah. hit jumps and rails, you just want to make some turns. Like
yeah.
if there's a slope with snow on it, you're boarding, you know, like it's
yeah, I love
like
it.
Really like,
I love it so much.
And dude. It's so good for you. Like you're using your legs, you're getting exercise. Like you're out there with your friends. Like,
yeah.
Ski patrol is not chasing you down. Like you're just doing whatever you want to do. Like your dog's there. Maybe your dog's there and you're running with your dog and you're boarding or whatever. Like
I love it.
It's too easy, you know, like, yeah.
So fun, Tyler.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to wrap it up. We did almost 2 hours there.
Oh yeah.
Just like
eh?
That.
Damn. That's a lot, eh?
You're a fascinating yeah. human being. And, yeah. And I want to thank you publicly for having me up here.
Yeah.
Having me into your home.
Oh, so fun.
Generous yeah. with your time. Mm-hmm. Taking me around your mountain.
No, it's fun to show you around. Like,
yeah. B, thank you for making such good food. Such rad hosts.
Well, it's so fun here. To just be at a new hill and be like, I still don't know this place. Like, I don't know it, like, yeah. the back of my hand.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I
yeah. don't,
on a pow day, it's like, where is the best place to go? Like, I'm still learning where all the best cliffs are and the best
features. It's quite fun, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So fun.
Yeah.
And everybody that was up here seemed to me to be on that same kind of tip.
Yeah.
Like nobody was like, oh, outsiders are here. No, they're no, just like,
great group
everybody's
of
stoked.
Here.
Like, yeah. you having fun? Colleen, the ski patrol, was so like just well, playful.
And to talk about Baldy for a minute, like, because I told him I'd like plug the hill a bit, but like,
please.
So Baldy's super special in the sense that it's like, it's high elevation.
Yes. You know,
it's the third highest base area in Canada.
Wow.
So we don't get rain, like we don't get melted out. The powder stays dry, you know, so you can count on coming here and you're going to get good conditions. You know, we have good groomers, like, you know, the place gets groomed well. We have a good team here. We have good management. And the champagne powder is real. Like it's dry and it's fluffy and it's fun, real. You know, and like
it is
in the glades here, like on Eagle Chair, like whoever did that, I think they did it over several years. Like the hill's been here since the 60s, but like, they cut a lot of trees and they did it really well. And like the fall lines are good. And like there's endless glade skiing. It's amazing. And when we get the snow and the wind blows, it traps it. And it doesn't blow away. Like you go in the forest and you can't believe how deep the snow is. Like,
yeah,
it's great. And the pow runs last forever because it's a small population around us, you know?
I was stoked on the facilities too. The bar was dope. The food was good. The
bar is awesome.
And it wasn't insane prices.
No, and the prices are reasonable. Like, the day pass is affordable. The season pass is affordable. You know?
Yeah. It was really overall like a very nostalgic experience for me. Like remembering, hey, this is what got me into it in the first place.
I kind of think it's like, it's what like people this. Are looking for. Yeah. Like they're not looking for the big commercial expenditure. They want to come to kind of like a, you know, kind of a sleepy little hill that's got some pow and the kids are safe and you're still in cell range and you don't get lost.
Yeah.
And you can just go have a time, you know, and there's cabins to rent. There's not fancy hotels everywhere. Like, you know, it's realistic for a lot of people.
It's a really nice experience. Yeah.
So it's got a lot going for it. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, I hope that you guys are up here for a long time.
Oh yeah. The park's going to be something. Oh yeah. Pretty excited.
Well, I'll come back. I'm going to come back this year for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm going to try and convince Dow to bring Devin up here and maybe do a trip and just hammer out some photos and like, it's just a nice spot to just be.
Yeah. If we could get Devin and Duffy here, that would be
Devin Duff. Yeah. That would be a fun time.
Cause they would just feed off each other, you know,
And then I can throw that out to the Patreon listeners if they want to come up and ride with us.
Yeah.
Come up here and we'll have a bit of a crew and
do a midweek
event and then that's not an event, that's just riding with those guys.
Pow Thursdays so like Baldy Powder Thursdays is where it's at. Like, we're closed, Eagle Chair's closed Tuesday, Wednesday. Mondays are pretty quiet, so if it snows beyond Sunday it just loads up all week, and then Thursday it goes off here. Like,
yeah,
so like if you want to ride powder, like Baldy on Thursdays is it's the place to be. Like,
it's worth the drive.
It's worth driving from Vancouver just to ride Thursday and then drive home.
Like, yeah, man,
like
totally.
Yeah,
be fun.
Well, and then, you know, if you hit here Thursday and then Manning Friday and then go home, it's you just hit Hemlock Saturday. Like, there's the hills are, like, there's three really great hills that people there's
fun.
Lineups, like,
that would be fun.
And they all get lots of snow.
Trifecta. Fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rad. Well, thanks for doing the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Stoked to talk to you, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Peace. F and Rad shout outs this week to Tyler and B. Thank you both for inviting me into your home. And special thanks to B for such amazing food while I was there. Also, thank you to Brandon and Quinn from Baldy Mountain Resort for setting up F and Rad with lift tickets. Very generous. I will be back. Thank you to all our Patreon supporters. You guys make it possible for me to do the show. If you're thinking about joining Patreon, go do it now. For just $5 a month, you get ad-free episodes, plus you stoke me out so fucking much. Thank you, guys. For free New Greens, tag New Greens in any F and Rad post, and for a chance to win a 1910 hoodie once a month. And now is the time I choose a winner. Just tag two buddies and 1910 on any F and Rad post anywhere. And be sure to come back next week for another episode of F and Rad Snowboarding, presented by Skyview Campers and brought to you by F and Rad Productions.